Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
So, hey, everybody, welcome to episode 240 of the More Than Just Code podcast. My name is Tim Mitra, and I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
I'm also joined by Mark Rubin down in San Jose, California.
Hello.
And we have a special treat this week. We're joined by Drew Freeman in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Is that right?
That is right.
All righty then. So, welcome to the show.
Hey, before we get started, Drew, would you mind just kind of introducing yourself so we know something about you to, you know, so we can interact?
Let's see. I have been one of the Ray Disciples now for about 2.5 years. I've been hosting the RW podcast. Cool. This, we're just going to be releasing the first or the 0th episode of season 9 next Wednesday, which is my birthday.
Happy birthday.
I've been,
but that's your third season as host.
Third,
right?
Season is going to debut on the 3rd. I have been programming on the Apple platform since I got an Apple II back in 79.
Mm-hmm.
Not a plus, not an E, not a GS, a C, just two. Didn't even have floating point basic. And have managed to make a career of staying on the platform and convincing everybody that I have a clue what I'm doing.
Cool. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
That's good. Okay, so we, quick fact check we had from last week. I mentioned at some point in the show that the original Mac resolution was 320 by 480. I don't know what I was thinking. My first Mac was 640 by 480, which was a resolution of the 13-inch color display, RGB color display. But the original Mac resolution was a 9-inch screen, and it was 512 by 342 pixels, I want to say. But yeah, so that was our factor.
320 by 480 was the original iPhone resolution.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's, I can't remember. Maybe that's why I said that. Yeah. I do that all the time. You know, I say 9 when I mean 10, and I say left when I mean right, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, as Drew mentioned earlier, it's the old synapses at work. Anywho, so I mean, do we have any Ask MTJC?
We have a couple. One is for me and my delightful little meme here of you can't be rejected for a WWDC ticket if you never registered for the lottery, with the helpful animated gif of the guy who's like, you know, tapping to his head like, hey, that's a really smart move.
All right.
Apparently that struck a chord because they had quite a few Twitter engagements on that, according to their analytics. So clearly other people felt the same way.
So did any of you actually get in?
No, I think I'm the only one that applied this year and I did not get in. I have, like you, I think you mentioned earlier that you hadn't got in on the Ray Slack. I saw that you said you hadn't got in since the lottery started.
Nope.
I officially haven't got in since the lottery started, but the first year of the lottery, one of my interns got a seat and we transferred it over to me because he couldn't go.
Well, I didn't exactly not get in last year. I had one of the credit card bounce things where they mistook the charge and they were like, well, you can't pay for it, so you're not coming anyway. And they gave my ticket to somebody else.
You're kidding me.
Nope. And there was a huge uproar over that, and they've fixed that this year. So apparently if you had had a credit card mischarge, you can call up Apple or WWDC support, and they'll see if they can fix that. But only this year. If you had the problem last year, try again next year.
Wow, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that. I knew that people would have trouble with their credit cards, obviously, because, you know, credit cards will sometimes do that if you have a large, unrecognizable charge, right? Mm-hmm. I guess that was your case?
In my case, it was I just didn't warn them that I was going to get a $1,700 charge, and they were like, well, we don't know what this is going to be. I mean, somebody may have stolen your credit card and gone to Apple on your behalf.
Right.
Yeah, and this makes sense as a change to me, because I can't imagine why there would be such an urgency to get all of these tickets accounted for within that same instantaneous point in time. I mean, 24 hours, 48 hours until the end of the week, just, you know, let people solve that. And then, okay, come Monday, we push those people off and give their tickets to the next batch of people that are randomly selected. That seems like a pretty reasonable way to do it, because in this case, I happen to be in the United States. So had I put in the WWDC lottery, put my hat in the ring, it would have worked out, because I would have had, a domestic charge on my credit card. But I have run into issues where the normal lockdowns I have on my credit card will work against me, right? Like, I think NS North some years ago, Bank of America refused to let me purchase the dang ticket because, like, hey, we see this weird charge from Toronto. I don't know if we should, or Ottawa. I don't know if we should allow that. And so I had to go in and say, yeah, no, that's totally fine. It's legit. Please move on. And that was with a ticket that didn't have so it sucks to be you. We're moving on to the next person.
Crazy. Yeah, banks are funny that way. All right. We have any more Ask MTJC, homie?
We have another one from Alicia Ramirez, who asks, how do you feel about public Wi-Fis, cafes, airports, and security? Do you avoid them? Do you use a VPN?
This is where we plug TunnelBear. TunnelBear, the VPN client you want to have on your device when you're at a public place or doing something you shouldn't be doing on the internet. Yeah. They all say that you know, there are people sitting in these Starbucks and whatever, just snooping the network for traffic, right? Or spoofing it or whatever they call that. Sniffing, I guess, right? I don't know. I never really worry about it too much, but I do actually have TunnelBear, but I don't think I use it. I don't go to these places other than flying in and out of the country kind of thing. I don't really go to cafes and stuff with my devices. I mean, I use my iPhone everywhere I go, so God help me if somebody's watching what I'm doing there, right?
Do you use cellular when you use your iPhone, or do you actually go onto the Wi-Fi network?
If somewhere has Wi-Fi, I'll use it. Yeah. But like most of the times, I'm on the streetcar and I'm just floating around through the city. So God help me, I'm bouncing all over, right?
Yeah.
And on the streetcar, there's like 300 people. So like, and there's all these open iPhone. I could be airdropping stuff to people on the, you know, on the streetcar all day long, and they wouldn't even know what the hell's going on.
I never use my laptop in a coffee shop anymore. I just don't do that anymore. If I'm out and about, I'll either have my iPad or my iPhone, and generally I don't do anything that I care if anyone is sniffing. You know, I'm not looking at bank stuff or anything like that. So if I do, though, I have TunnelBear also, and I'll turn that on.
Yeah, I think it's the what I'm actually doing is what causes me to raise up the security of what I'm doing. I was in a cafe this afternoon, and I was loading some of my software onto a friend's phone, and I had to register his phone over on the Apple developer site. So I needed the laptop, and I figured, well, I've already got that as two-factor authentication. It's not going to have any problem with me getting into that site. And, you know, I ramped up my security level and then did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and good old HTTPS for the encryption of the traffic. Mm-hmm. That helps too. And who's not using HTTPS these days, right? All right. So speaking of privacy and security and stuff like that, I've been talking about using DuckDuckGo for the last month or so. And I, you know, to be honest with you, at first couple of days, I noticed it was a little different than Google. It didn't quite have that same sort of, you know, smooth sort of look to it. But I've changed my phones over. I've changed my Macs over to DuckDuckGo. And now Google Chrome has added the ability for users to add DuckDuckGo to their browsing experience. I guess on Safari, we've had DuckDuckGo as an option for a long, long time. But I didn't realize that on Google Chrome, they didn't have that available to them. So I don't know.
Well, I'm sure you could type in the URL and go there directly. Yeah. It's just it wasn't built in.
As a default choice, yeah.
Yeah. But given that it's Google, I wonder if the integration now means that they get to eavesdrop on what you're searching for on DuckDuckGo and serve you ads because of that.
Now that would be kind of defeat the evil purpose. Mark.
Yes, it would.
Yeah. Well, we talked last week about, or 2 weeks ago, I guess, about the senator going after the Google guy because you could turn off location services, but you couldn't actually turn off location services.
Right.
If you follow my meaning. Yeah.
Yep.
So you could have this, the satisfaction side feeling that you turned it off, when in fact you hadn't turned it off. So, gotta love Google. All right, and this is just a follow-up, another follow-up item. With the announcement of the new AirPod, are they calling them AirPod 2, or what are they calling these new AirPods? The one with the Wi-Fi charging base station thingy. What do you call the little capsule they go into? Nobody knows. Nobody has them. But surprise, surprise, after 2 years since these things came out, the batteries are starting to die out on these on the original AirPods. A friend of mine at work was mentioning that his battery doesn't quite hold the same charge it used to when he first got them. And he gladly is, I think his just arrived today, his new ones. But yeah, so this is it's kind of a surprise and kind of not a surprise that the batteries would be wearing out after a couple of years. It's typical of Apple to sort of make a claim that you get X amount of life out of a device. But I think I've never actually been able to get the actual amount of hours that Apple says you can get on a device, you know, like the 13-hour MacBook battery and that kind of stuff, MacBook 13 battery.
Yeah. Now, I don't have AirPods because, as we've talked about many times, they don't fit in my ears, right? But can you not replace the battery in these? Is it?
No. Well, the new one, apparently, iFixit has sort of, they always do a teardown whenever they get new Apple stuff, and they did a teardown of the new versions. And in the original versions, I think it's kind of a continuous piece of plastic, like the long part to where the microphone is at the end. Uh-huh. And that, you know, that's where the battery is, apparently. And the new one, the new version they just showed, it's got a split down the side, so it looks like you can get at the battery to replace that one. But then again, they're lithium-ion batteries, which last long and are, you know, they're well-made and that kind of stuff, but like they have a finite life, right? You can only have so many charges on them in any device, right? And how big can they be in these AirPods, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at the Apple website. I don't think you can buy the old AirPods. I think they're just called AirPods. A lot of people online refer to them as like AirPods 2, and I was just going to guess they'd call them, you know, the new AirPods like they did with the iPad 3. I don't see anything on there, but it sort of makes sense to me that such a small little battery would just, you know, over time of usage would wear out more noticeably and faster than it would seem a considerably larger, let's say, like iPad battery or iPhone battery. So this just sort of makes sense on, you know, on the face of it from a physics standpoint. I think the thing that's a little bit weird in this article is the like, oh, like look how much trash Apple's throwing into the garbage. Like, well, Apple's kind of like the last company you should be dinging on this, because they probably have like a robot that you you take it to the Apple store and the robot just takes it apart and, you know, they deal with it properly. What you really should be worried about is all the competitors to AirPods that have come out in the intervening years. And those are almost certainly going directly into the bellies of baby seals, right? Like that's like not even pretend here. That's not to say we shouldn't continue to push on Apple to deal with this sort of thing, but I don't see this as a user serviceable part. Like it's just a small, tiny device. I think reducing and reusing and then recycling is probably a much more tenable sort of way of moving forward with this.
I believe the new wireless cases are compatible with the original AirPods. I wonder whether or not they've amped up or fixed some of the battery charging so that it might actually give you a little more life in those old ones.
Oh, could be. I don't know. It'd be a good thing for somebody to test to see if it charges any differently. Yeah. Like, so something that's not stressing the AirPods battery. Is that what your premise?
Yeah. It's using a different charge algorithm, possibly.
I guess you can go get one of those Samsung phones to charge your wireless AirPods now. You're not going to buy that one, guys.
I mean, hypothetically, because it does have the ability to wirelessly charge. I don't know if there's
like AirPower would, right?
Yeah.
So like, you get your AirPower. Just
I don't know if there's like a compatibility. So my hesitance was like, well, I wonder if there's like a compatibility reason why it wouldn't. Or does it just say, hey, a Qi charging device wants to get charged. Here you go, buddy. It's all on you now.
Yeah. That's where I was going with that joke. All right. Yeah. And this one, I just found this one today, actually. I thought it was interesting that Apple, I mean, people are still complaining about the new keyboard that came out in 2015. It's been 3 years. People get over it. But the Apple has apologized to somebody at, I believe, the Wall Street Journal. Yeah. About the, some customers are still having trouble with the new keyboards. And just as for an example, we have over 20 of these new model computers at work, like the 2016, was it 2016 that the Touch Bar Mac first came out? So we've had the three iterations of them over the years, and And we've only had to send one in because it had a bit of dust under the key, or a piece of sand or whatever, you know. But what do you guys think about this?
I have to take mine in. My space bar is beginning to die.
Yeah, I have one of these Macs, but I use an external keyboard, so can't really say.
Yeah, I do not have one of these, but I have been holding out, even though supposedly the most recent model has the little membrane that makes it less likely to run into problems. I'm still waiting for some new device, let's say come October or maybe September, where they, you know, they come on stage and there's a big sand pit and they say, oh, and we've pulled this MacBook Pro right out of this kid's sandbox, and see, it still works. Go buy some.
You can pour a bag of Cheetos on it and it still works. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like a pepper grinder right over the top of the space bar, right? And see if it works. Yeah.
Well, according to iFixit here in this article that I've got linked in the show notes, they have added this membrane thing, but it's less than ideal. It doesn't quite, it helps a bit, but it's not perfect. So anyway, I guess it's rare that Apple actually sort of says, I think they're sort of in the article, if you read between the lines, it's kind of like they're saying, yeah, some iPads are bent, you know? But they're just sort of saying, yeah, some people have problems with it, but what are you going to do?
Well, we are kind of due for a new MacBook Pro design, don't you think?
Maybe.
Were these actually in 2015 when these came out?
Late 2016, I believe, is when I got my first one, like in the fall of 2016.
Okay, so it's almost three years. Yeah.
Maybe 2017. Let's hit the Wikipedia.
I think it was 2016, actually. Yeah, because the one I'm using now, I got at the company I'm working at now, which I joined in early 2017. So it would have, and it wasn't a brand new model at the time.
Right.
So it must have been 2016. Yeah. So 3 years. I mean, maybe they'll just redesign the whole thing.
The 12-inch MacBook was when this style of keyboard first came out, right? In 2015.
The impression I got was that the Intel stutter of their timeline has caused the problem with them being able to really innovate internally due to the heat dissipation. And I keep getting the impression that they're going to move to the ARM chip, and that may free them up to do some redesign.
You mean as the Mac processor?
Yeah. Mm. Now, again, that's all impression, and I don't have articles to back that up right now.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah. All right. So this...
A line of ARM-based MacBooks would definitely fit in well with the whole Marzipan thing.
Yeah.
Not that they have to be related, but it would make a good story if that happened this summer.
Well, there were people speculating that when they mentioned the other day that the Apple TV app is coming to the Mac OS. Didn't they say that in the announcement?
Yeah,
they did say that. Yeah.
Yeah. So people are speculating that would be another Marzipan example app, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
makes sense.
Well, a lot of the stuff from the event, I guess when you get onto the event, is not coming until the fall, which is pretty much the release of the next set of OSs. And that'll probably be the first full Marzipan release.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, our next follow-up item is a bit of a sad story. Jaime and I were both tweeting out last week about the our famous 2018, or now infamous, I guess, 2018 t-shirt, which said something to the effect of, I entered the conference lottery and all I got was this lousy t-shirt. I'm paraphrasing. But I went to renew the campaign on our famous supplier, and they removed it because apparently there's an intellectual property question in our, guess I wasn't sure if it was the description I put in to go with the t-shirt or if they actually looked at the t-shirt itself, but we still do have them available on our products page. So if you really, really, really want one, we have a few left over from last year, and we can certainly get some made up if you really want them. In fact, I have some double extra larges if you're really interested. But any thoughts on this, Jaime?
Yeah, I was really surprised that I tweeted out about it, and then it was like, oh, look, the link's gone. I was like, that's weird. So
yeah.
We were speculating internally, is it Apple with the name WWDC, right? There was AltConf and its whole sort of kerfuffle with Apple over the naming of its own conference.
When they called it AltConf, they got...
Well, they renamed it to AltConf. I forgot what they called it prior. I'd have to look that up.
Oh, like not WWDC or something like that.
Something of that nature. And then, Mark, you brought up the other alternative idea that I hadn't even thought about.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. Given that this is a t-shirt company that rejected us, it's certainly possible. I have no idea if it's actually true that the whole trope of this lousy t-shirt is actually copyrighted by someone. And if anyone would know about that, I think it would be a t-shirt company. So it's possible. I don't know.
Right, right. And I was joking that, and maybe I'm not joking anymore, but that we were going to change the name of, or the title on our t-shirt this year to, have you changed your Facebook password? password yet.
Yeah.
But which leads us to the next story.
Did we ever use Apple WWDC on that t-shirt? I forget.
No,
just WWDC?
No, I mean, maybe WWDC is and maybe I should change it to I entered the dub lottery, you know. I don't know what triggered it.
It seems like WWDC is a, I mean, we think of it as an Apple thing, but it's certainly not.
There's no TM at the end of it.
I've worked at other companies that had worldwide developer conferences.
Oh, true, yeah.
They just weren't as famous as the Apple one. So it's hard to imagine that that's copyrighted. It's kind of odd.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the whole thing is Apple WWDC.
Yeah,
right, but we weren't putting that on the shirt, though.
Yeah, and it wasn't like we were trying to dupe people into thinking this was a legit WWDC t-shirt. It's basically our podcast t-shirt for the year, right? So, and it was up for a whole year. That's the part that really freaks me out. Why all of a sudden, unless somebody's updated, it's, you know, typical of a website or e-commerce website. They've added a word to their white blacklist or whatever, right? And
they let the Google I/O one go through, right?
Shh, don't say that so loud.
Oh. Well, that one's gone now.
Yeah.
Nobody bought that one either. That's a funny part.
You know, just start using spammer techniques where we find some Unicode character that looks like WWNDC, but is specifically a different character or set of characters than the ASCII character representation.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I'm looking at the website now, and this Spockcast t-shirt's looking pretty dicey to me with that.
Really? That's true.
Star Trek communicator thing right there, front and center on the shirt. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. You know, Mark, they say there's no such thing as bad publicity, so...
With all the t-shirt companies doing all of their derivative art and derivative fandom, it's surprising that any of them would go, well, you know, at this point, maybe we should start enforcing a copyright.
Yeah.
Well, the best part about it is if you do have one of our famous, you know, WWDC t-shirts, it's now a collector's item because they're rarer than rare.
Yep.
All right. But speaking of Facebook, my next story, and I've started up a new section in the podcast called WTF, and this is our company that we love to lambaste on a regular basis, but it came out early, or I guess just after we recorded last week, that Facebook has been storing your password in plain text on their database. So let me say again, any employee at Facebook could just go ahead and have a look at your password. So they're saying 600 million users possibly had their passwords exposed this way. So have you changed your Facebook password yet? I know Mark's not worried about it.
Well, I do have a Facebook account. I just don't use it very often.
Right.
Yeah, I haven't. And this article doesn't really go into it, but I think I'd seen in some other ones there is a little bit of flavor and nuance to this. So when they say stored, I think they mean it's stored in some sort of logging system. And my understanding is that it was related to the Facebook Lite app that they have for markets that are still developing and where larger, richer multimedia experiences are kind of at a disadvantage because of issues with costly bandwidth or maybe even unavailable bandwidth. So there's that, right? That's why it's not all, what, 2.5 to 3 billion users that Facebook has.
But it's been since 2012.
Yeah, right? And I think that's why it's so large. I'm not downplaying it, but it's not the main app. And I think it was something wrong with the logging system that was logging incorrect password attempts. So I don't think they had your actual password. I think they had, you know, if it was password 12345 and you put in password 1234, well, okay, so they have most of it now. So I think it's still terrible. And you would think that like a code review or some other sort of compliance team or security team would have looked at this sort of thing and said, hey, holy smokes, what are we doing? Don't be logging passwords and other critical information to the logging system. That doesn't make sense. It's still a big flub for sure.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there's also a good chance to plug 2FA because Facebook does that.
And... now they do, yeah. I think they only had that a few weeks ago a little while ago. Mm-hmm. Let me see. Yeah, I'm just looking at 1Password here. It says that 2-factor authentication is available on Facebook. So I have a couple of other accounts that I manage for friends of mine, and it says right inside of 1Password, compromised login. Data stored on this website may have been compromised. Please change your password. Keep your account safe. Your mileage may vary. All right. What's next?
Yeah, one of the things that sort of got lost in all the hubbub of all the stuff that we'll talk about in the main topics is the fact that Swift 5 was released for Xcode 10.2. So I've posted the Twitter thread from a friend of the show, sometimes co-host and renowned fruit enthusiast, Greg Hio, who has some of the highlights here. So let's take a look at those. So I know we had talked about the result type and that being, or enumeration, I should say, that is available. So you don't have to roll your own if you don't want to. You certainly can if you've got something that doesn't fit neatly into success and failure. But that's still pretty nice that they've taken a community practice and turned it into something that's officially supported. And the other thing that might have gotten lost that I certainly didn't notice when I briefly perused the notes was set and dictionary now use a different hash seed for each newly created instance. So if you create what appears to you to be the same exact set, you are no longer guaranteed to get the same order. And they show here, they put a set of integers 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 into two different variables, and then they print out to see what they are. And it's like, whoops, nope, they're not in the same order. So if your code was relying on that, even accidentally, you're going to get bit by this. So word to the wise.
You're never actually guaranteed to get it. It just sounds like that it was happening. You would get the same order more often than you might expect before, and now that's no longer the case. But kind of by definition of a set, they don't come in the same order.
And dictionary too, right?
And dictionary too. Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of those things that was never officially supported, but the implementation was such that people sort of became implicitly reliant on it. I'll use the same exact thing that I don't believe is the case anymore. And even if it was, please do not rely upon this. But it used to be the case that, or the unit testing framework, it would run the tests in alphabetical order, regardless of what order you'd actually defined the functions within your test case. And some people would say, oh, well, there's this really terrible way that we have of setting this thing up and we can't get around it for business reasons. So if we make sure that this particular test runs last by calling it test ZZZZZZZZ and then whatever the actual test name is, then we can make sure that it doesn't mess up all the other tests, because otherwise you'd end up with a flaky test suite. That's another one of those examples of clearly that was never an official part of the spec, but it was something that people have relied upon as people are wont to do.
One of the nice things that Swift 5 has finally given us is that stable ABI that people have been wishing for.
Yes.
For the developer point of view, that's one thing. For the end user point of view, it's the fact that you're going to now have smaller apps, more apps will fit on your device.
Yeah, that's right.
I've been on the app I'm working on now, I've been bumping up against the upper limit for a while now. And every time we do a release, have to figure out what we can cut, what assets can we cut out because we're just so full. And this will help a lot there. Just give us a bunch more headroom.
What is the upper limit, Mark?
150 megabytes.
Really?
Yep. For wireless download.
For wireless download. Yes.
And that's specifically over the air, right? Non Wi-Fi. I'm guessing when you say
that's right. Cellular, most likely. Yes.
Yeah, cellular for sure. Wi-Fi,
yeah.
Cool. All right.
Maybe they'll bump up the cellular limit now that the ABI has been put through, because they do bump that cellular limit every couple of years.
True.
It used to be 50 megabytes a while back. Mm-hmm. Right?
I do remember that. That was a big pain in the neck.
Yeah. Another thing I'm pretty happy about in Swift 5 is this. There used to be a case where if you did a try on something that could return an optional, you'd get this double optional back as a result of your try. Mm-hmm. And now they collapse that down to a single optional, which is kind of what you'd expect to get. There's kind of, I can't think of any case where you'd really want this double optional thing. So I'm really glad to see that they've gotten rid of that, done it the intuitive way now.
All right, cool. What else is new, Jaime?
Yeah, slight spoilers, but I think we've already gotten into the habit of spoiling content that we're going to talk about later in this episode. So Apple has released iOS 12.2, support for the News Plus service, new AirPods, and I'm surprised nobody's mentioning the four new Animoji, that being the owl, the boar, the giraffe, and the shark. Like that is the carrot that gets people to, install the security patch that represents 12.2. There's other sorts of cool stuff here. We've got a link in the show notes for those of you driving home of this Ars Technica blog post that has more of the notes, if you're not the kind of person who likes to read them within the iOS update system itself.
Of course, Apple's already acknowledged the fact that the News Plus app is crashing on a few people's systems spontaneously, and they said they worked on a server-side patch, but I know that there's still some people having crashes with that app. So 12.2.1 probably really soon.
Hmm. Did anyone have any issues installing any of the updates today?
I did not. Last night I updated my iPad, my iPhone, and today I updated my Apple Watch to 5.2 probably?
Yeah, I was just waiting to see if you guys bricked your phones before I tried it.
Yeah. Well, I updated two laptops, two iPhones, and an iPad, and all of the iPhones and iPads worked fine. One of the laptops, everything worked perfectly. On the other laptop, the OS X update went perfectly fine. In fact, it was completely smooth. But surprisingly, the Xcode update was really problematic. It got to a about 95% and then just sort of hung there for like an hour before I killed it and started again. And then after I tried to start again, it wouldn't download at all for a while. And only after logging out of the App Store and logging back in multiple times and rebooting multiple times did it start downloading again. And then it got to that exact same 95% point and stopped again. And it took something like 2 hours sitting at 95% before it finally finished. Very strange.
Yeah, that's odd.
Yeah. So maybe it was something with that machine, that particular machine, because it worked fine on my other one. But I don't know. I was telling a coworker that you know, I've historically never had any problems updating anything. This is the first time, so I was kind of surprised and not delighted.
So is installing the the command line tools at the end was the problem, maybe, or
no, it was just the main install. I haven't even gotten the command line tools yet.
Wow. Well, things to look forward to.
Yeah.
Like Tim, I usually advise people just waiting a week or so, or at least a handful of days, and let all the millions of other people updating to get their Animoji be the guinea pigs.
Yeah.
I decided to YOLO it this time. I felt like, well, there's enough days left in the week that I can, if I totally brick my phone, I have enough time to go acquire a new one and open back up.
I was sometimes cautious, but there was a 0.6 release like on Friday, the beta 0.6, and I figured this has got to be the release master and there's not going to be much more shift. So I figured it was going to be a safe jump, but the only thing I saw was a little slowdown on Xcode just due to, I think, the servers being hammered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, since we're here, let's talk about the Apple event that happened on Monday, right? We knew it was going to be something related to the new streaming services that they have been talking about for a long time. So, but why don't we go through them? I guess I'll start with Apple News. We knew that Apple was going to be doing something magazine related because they had bought we assumed that they were going to do something because they had bought Texture, the Toronto-based company that was handling multiple magazine subscriptions. But I guess the surprise was that they rolled it out into their News Plus service, right? Which we just talked about crashing on a few people's machines. But has anybody seen any pricing on that? I got to get my notes out. But
I thought it was $10 for
$10 a month.
Yeah, and it's free for families. We were talking about this last week that we were wondering whether these services would be bumped up, you know, $5 or whatever for a share with your family. But I believe they said that the News Plus is shared for free with your family.
I think they said that everything their plan now is that the family sharing is part of it. So when you get it for one on the family sharing account, you get it for the whole family, and that's that pillar of their views on services.
Sure. Yeah, and they said they have 300 titles, magazine titles, going into the app or into the service.
Well, they said 3,000, and then they kind of backed away and said, "Oh no, yeah. I'm sorry, 300."
Right. Yeah, he's not working at Apple anymore.
that was the guy on the keynote stage for the very first time, and you know, 5 years from now, he'll be on John Gruber's the talk show and be like, "Yep, I totally flubbed it. Yep, I absolutely heard about it immediately."
So he wasn't wearing an MTJC's T-shirt, right?
Yeah, but you know, notably here in my notes, I have USA and Canada in English and French for 30 magazines, including Toronto's own. The Star? Is there a the?
Where's the it? Star? Yeah,
okay, Toronto The Star.
Well, The Star is the website, but it's Toronto Star. It's funny because ironically that they say that because like lately the Star's 90% of the articles, I may be wrong, but the percentage are from the Wall Street Journal. So, you know, kind of ironic.
I'm curious if this is going to depend on what your account is based. Are you only going to get the Star if you're in Canada? So are these things only national distribution? Do you get the Wall Street Journal?
I would think, that's a good question. Cause I know that right now through the Toronto Star online or they have a, like an iOS sort of version-y thing of it. I think website, you can get the Wall Street Journal directly from the Star for a few extra shekels per month or per week or whatever. Yeah. It's interesting. Cause I mean, most newspapers these days run off of Reuters and they all pick up the same stories at the same time. Right. But Toronto Star has something to do with Wall Street Journal these days, but I would think so. Yeah. And the other news is that the News app has not been available to Canadians until just now, because it wasn't rolled out here yet. And so all the Canadians are running around, but I've had my region set to US for forever. Cause one of our customers publishes to the news app. So I've been using it for a couple of years now. But generally speaking, I'm doing air quotes. It's new to Canadians, right? And it doesn't. It makes sense to me too, because like literally, it's like the Shortcuts app. They've just which was what called Workflow before, right? Apple, you know, acquired Texture, and so they naturally would get the Canadian titles come along with it, right? I don't know if Texture was available in the States. Was it? Do you know?
I have no idea. I really, to be honest, hadn't heard of Texture until the acquisition happened. But it must not be that far away from distribution, because I also have in my notes that it's coming later this year to Australia and Europe, starting with the UK.
Right.
So, all right, let's maybe for each of these, we can do the sort of around the table sort of thing. so I'll start with Tim, because we'll leave Drew towards the end to give you sort of the, like, let's see how it goes so you feel comfortable. Tim, are you going to sign up for Apple News?
Probably not. I mean, I can't think of any magazines per se that I need to have access to that I don't already, you know, sort of find some way to get. So it's not for me. Ironically, though, and Mark Wright may remember this, but our first iPad app in 2010 was a magazine app. So, and you know, we kind of went through the whole newsstand thing as well. And so we've given up on that and moved on to different other vehicles of getting our content out. But so it's kind of, you know, here we are, 8 years later, and Apple's now, 9 years later, and Apple's now doing what we were trying to do, sadly. Like, the iPad is a perfect a venue for consuming magazines, in my opinion, and comic books, right?
It works well for that. It works well. So yep. I think I heard, so no, that it just didn't meet your particular specific needs. And what about Mark? What about your needs?
I don't know yet. I kind of want to see the list of magazines and list of newspapers that are going to be available for my $10. Off the top of my head, I can't think of that many magazines that I'd want to buy. But, you know, but if there were things like let's say, for example, one magazine that I used to read was The Economist, which was great. But I eventually canceled because it actually came too often, because it's a weekly magazine, mm-hmm. with that's very dense. And I found I never had time to finish it. So it wasn't worth my subscribing to it. But if they had that and other stuff, you know, where, you know, I didn't feel bad about not reading it all the time because I didn't have time, then it might be kind of cool to get it, to do something like that. So it depends on what magazines are there, and I just don't know yet.
Cool. And Drew?
Well, as an Apple junkie, they said the first hit was free. They're basically saying 1 month free, and it's that free subscription offer, and then if you remember to cancel it, you'll get off. So I wanted to see what the magazines were too, and they had two or three that interested me, so I'm going to see the quality of the magazines over this month. I like Make Magazine, for starters, so I've subscribed on their at least free month, and I'll see how I feel about it after I read through a couple of magazines and see whether the format works. But then again, I'm also one of the people who's been dealing with the app crashing, so there may be a connection there.
Right. And so I guess we'll put you down as a to be determined, but you are trying out the free trial, and we'll do some follow-up on that one.
Yep.
You know, a month or two from now, see, you know, all right, or, you know, how's it going? Are you sticking with it? I guess I'll answer for myself. I'm not going to at this very moment, but I think, like Mark, I might take a look at the finalized list and see what's available. Because I've seen people say, like, well, you know, what is news worth? And, you know, $9.99 a month, it seems like a lot. Granted, Apple started with, like, the absurd number of, like, yeah, if you went to all these magazines, it'd be, like, $8,000 a year. I'm like, all right, nobody in the world subscribes to all these magazines, right? But point taken, that when I step back and think about magazine subscriptions I've had in the past, $9.99 a month is really, like, the price of, like, one magazine, and not, like, the kind that's just trying to get subscribers, you know, a dollar a month sort of thing, but more the, like you mentioned, like a Make magazine, sort of more narrowly focused. It's probably like $20 at the newsstand sort of magazine. So you get a little bit
for a year, right?
It depends. Like, I'd be surprised if Make was only 20 per year.
Well, maybe a little more, but yeah, probably maybe like 30, 40. But so if it's only one magazine that you're interested in, then $120 a month might be kind of steep. But if it's two or three, then sure. Yeah,
good point. It's like, figure out how many magazines it would be, and then the convenience of not having, like, The Economist filling up your doorstep, you know, with more and more copies.
Wait, it's $9 per magazine?
No, I think it's an all-you-can-eat.
Oh, okay, yeah. It's like a Netflix.
$120 a year.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah. No, right. I heard Mark said $120 a month, but yeah, I wondered if it was $20.
Sorry, a year, yeah.
So, I mean, so as you know, Carol reads the Toronto Star every day. We get it delivered to our house, or my son used to be the editor of the Toronto Star and that kind of stuff, right? So We pay $54 a month or something like that. Ridiculous now for that. So Carol does consume a lot of magazines, so it may be worth our while to get into this thing if I can convince her to use it on the iPad. Right?
From a debt point of view, I'm rather interested because it looks like the newsstand functionality is still there, because there are certain magazines that I've subscribed to that I only get through their sort of the newsstand side of things. A good example is Cinefex, which is a quarterly magazine on motion pictures, right, yep. Special effects. And I'm curious to see whether or not they're going to try to unify this, or whether or not that's still going to be a separate thing until they can get those magazines under the fold.
Good question.
All right, well, let's move on. Number two thing was Apple Pay, actually, Jaime, but I don't know. They just mentioned some of the percentages of use for that. Was there anything specific they said that was new about Apple Pay?
Yes. I guess your mileage or kilometerage may... No, it's definitely mileage. No, I'm looking at the cities. Your mileage may vary as to the utility of this, but they were talking about bringing the Apple Pay transit to New York City, Chicago, and Portland.
Oh, true, right.
Yeah, which like, you know, all right, you know, New York makes sense, Chicago makes sense. Portland shocked me because I thought for sure that last one was going to be San Francisco.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed about that.
But I don't know what the situation there is. People who have asked, the Orca card situation here in the Seattle region is not a great story, so not surprised they didn't bring it here to the...
But do you have one card that's, like, here we have Presto card in Toronto now that you can use on like on the commuter trains as well as on the Toronto Transit Commission stuff, like the buses and streetcars. In New York, they have the Metro Pass thing, or Metro card, or whatever they call it, right? And they've had that forever. And what do they have? Doesn't San Francisco have a different system for the BART and for the streetcars and buses?
They're all different systems, but you can get one card that works on all.
Oh, okay, yeah. So that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
And what about Portland?
But I sort of suspect that the technology is sort of antiquated, so it wouldn't work with scanning from a phone or something like
that. Yeah, is it near field communication or something, right?
Yeah.
Because the Presto card's an NFC, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And yeah, but it's it's kind of silly in terms of how it's been deployed, but yeah. People still scratch their heads over the fact that you can put money on it, but you can't use the money you put on it for 24 hours because the buses update at the station when they leave in the morning, and they don't update till later, right? Till they get back to the station. So if you put money in the middle of the day, you have to wait till tomorrow to be able to use it. So that's one complaint about it. But it would, you know, be, I think you'd have to have sort of infrastructure where it would update right away, right? Like New York's had the Metro. I think I've been going to New York since the 90s, and they had that magnetic stripe card that you could just charge and put more money on, right? The same with, like, I think Virginia has that too, right? But who knows? What else have they got there that's really cool and made of titanium, I mean?
That would be the new Apple Card. And that's only if you actually are going to use the physical one, I guess.
True. I think people would just want to get it because it's cool. But that said, U.S. only.
Initially.
I mean, to start, right? Yeah.
So, you guys excited about it? Not excited about it? Apple, like, from a fintech company, Jaime, you guys must have talked about this at work the other day, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like they're disrupting, as you like to say, your favorite word, the whole credit card system, right?
Yeah, it's kind of funny to see how people in the circles that I run in, working at a fintech company, as you mentioned, how we perceive the event versus sort of the average mainstream Apple news sites, who are like, oh, this is like the most boring part. And we're like, no, this is the most fundamentally cool part. All the other stuff, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, you know, you serve bits for $9.99 a month and it's news. Like, yeah, that's not the exciting part. The exciting part is Apple is drawing a line in the sand and saying, this is what we're going to do from a credit standpoint. They're distinctly not making themselves a bank, even though people stated it that way. The real bank, he says with air quotes, scary air quotes, is Goldman Sachs. That's an important distinction.
And MasterCard.
And MasterCard being the ostensible payment processor in credit card issuer, right? I've seen a whole bunch of different stuff here. Let's cover some of the main points because people might have missed this part of the event. So it's a card that you can auto-provision in minutes, meaning you can start using the card with Apple Pay, for example, in your Apple Wallet immediately while you're waiting for the etched titanium physical card to make its way to you. You'll get different rewards in terms of percentage points back of, at the high end, 3% when you spend at Apple's stores, 2% if you use Apple Pay, and still 1% if you use that physical card as your backup. And they're claiming no late fees, no annual fees, no international fees, no over-limit fees. no penalty interest rates. Curiously, people have called him out for stating lower interest rates. And I definitely want to talk about that.
Yeah, so I just pasted in the notes here that we looked it up. There's an article I've linked in, I think, here as well, that it's somewhere between 13 and 22%, depending on a bunch of factors when you first sign up, I guess your credit rating or whatever. But that's, yeah, it's I guess 13% is lower than the average card, but it's not the lowest that I've heard of.
Yeah, there were crazy people online like, oh, it should be zero. That would be disruptive. I'm like, yes, that would be called free money, especially yeah. with no penalties and stuff. Like, yes, I'm sure. 13.
It would be negative money for Apple because they're giving them cash back.
Right. Yes, that's true. So I do think that the 22, I thought it was like 24-ish percent, but you know, the 20s is definitely high, and it would definitely be unfortunate if you were somebody who was in that. 13 is not as low as some that people have mentioned out there, but it's certainly lower than the average, which is like 16-ish percent. And theirs is a non-penalty rate. So you'll either see like 7 to 9% rate cards, but their promotional rate for the first, you know, 6 months, or there's an annual fee on the card, or whoops, you missed a payment. Guess what? Now it's 24%. There's all sorts of things related to that. It's hard to figure out where this fits. I don't believe it is the best, no matter how you cut it, but it doesn't mean that it's not like a loser at any point. I don't think you are actively making a bad financial decision to choose this one, from what I can tell.
So, Andre, you linked an article in here from 9 to 5 Mac about the interest rates?
Yeah, it turns out that out of everything that people were watching about the event, apparently the Apple Card piqued the public's interest. One person said that the video for just the card has racked up 15 million views in less than the first 2 days.
Wow.
And people who were voting about which thing they want, they're saying over half of them want the card, and that's more than the games, and we'll talk about that, or the TV and any of that stuff. And that's really interesting. I think it's, you know, the cash coming in, the lack of fees, but people are just really fascinated by this card.
Mm-hmm. Well, like Carmen said, it's the big story, right?
Yeah. And interestingly enough, the cash back is actually not that good, this card. Yeah, 1% when you use it in a brick and mortar, 2% through Apple Pay, and 3% on Apple products. Now, if you buy a lot of Apple products, maybe that's good, but for just the regular everyday user, it's not actually that great.
But there is the fact that it's cash back now, and most people with cash back, it's, well, you wait until it shows up on your statement in a month or so.
Well, oh, yeah, true. Yeah.
And
true.
Some people like true. The idea of, well, I'm getting that money back just by using it right now.
I don't get the whole incentive of cash back myself. Like, I don't, like, you're spending money to get money back, and it's kind of like reverse psychology, you know? Like, is it just that you're getting a discount on what you're buying? Is that the idea?
You'd probably view it as a coupon.
I guess so, yeah.
Hmm,
although, you know, 1% is not that great of a coupon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tricky, Tim, because there is a whole industry around rewards on credit cards, and I think of it as being like fire, right? Fire is dangerous. You need to be careful, but we all have fire somewhere, whether we have, like, you know, a heater in the house or a stove or whatnot. Like, I don't think it's enough to say, like, oh yeah, like, all reward stuff is bad. Like, clearly, if you are trying to chase rewards and you're getting yourself into trouble, and especially with revolving debt like you would get on a credit card, it can be a real pain, right? Like, there are people who it's like, oh, but I get all these rewards. Like, yeah, you don't pay off the amount, the balance every month, which means you're losing that amount in the, let's be generous and say it's 13%, right? You're getting 1%, let's say 5% back, because there's other cards that have 5. You're getting 5% back, but you're paying them 13% for that privilege. So really, it's like 8% that you're still paying. You didn't come out ahead. You can, if you do, you know, stay diligent and pay off everything. There's still some risk there because of, you know, like, you have buffers. What if you lose your job? What if you, you have long-term medical disability, or, you know, so on and so forth. So not going to claim it's like, yay, go chase after them. I'm not going to demonize them either. But I think to Mark's point there, it is kind of still so-so cashback, but that's the incentive system there of like, hey, look, like, you effectively are paying less if you're able to properly manage that and are fortunate enough, I think.
But I do think a lot of it's going to be the coolness factor, the status factor of whipping out that titanium card in real life.
Which, interestingly, has no numbers on it.
Yes, yeah. Very importantly. Yeah, they definitely mention that. CVV, no expiration dates.
No card number.
None of that stuff. Yeah, no card number. Wild.
Yeah, so how do you use it for online purchases if it has no CVV, SEMA number?
I think you can use
available
the device.
In the Apple Wallet.
Yeah.
Oh, true. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and where are you shopping that doesn't have wonderful integrated with Safari Apple Pay on their website?
Apple Pay, exactly. Well, in the United States, it could be one place. But speaking of the U.S., and I mentioned earlier at the top of this piece that it's currently U.S. only, but in this article I got linked in from the Apple Insider, where I got the interest rates from, by the way, and it's linked in the show notes. It basically says that they're soft launching it in the United States, you could say, because it's going to roll out into other countries shortly after it settles down and does its focused launch in the U.S. is what they're calling it. So something to look forward to. And apparently Goldman Sachs is going to try and set up international, like Goldman Sachs International is going to cover the card in other countries. I mean, I kind of get the sense that this is the iPod and the iPhone sort of approach that Apple's used to sort of disrupt an industry, you know, like Uber sort of took on taxis and, you know, Push for Pizza took over the pizza people, right? But you guys aren't laughing today. I don't want to, you guys are like dead.
That one in particular, just for Drew's benefit and for longtime listeners, I'm talking from like way back to, I believe it is episode 2. We'll have to fact check that one. I think one of my picks of the week, the very first pick of the week I think I ever had was Push for Pizza, an app where you would just push a button and pizza would come to your house. They're not IPOing as far as I know. I haven't seen all these S1 documents being dropped, but not Push for Pizza, unfortunately.
Yeah, so it'd be interesting to see what this does, if it does anything for the whole credit card industry, right? You know, this is, it's kind of a big thing that Apple kind of snuck in there, if you think about it, because we were all expecting them to talk about TV and, you know, their new gaming platform or whatever, right? So
I think it's pretty big, because they also mentioned that Goldman Sachs will never share or sell your data for advertising or marketing purposes, which is atypical for the industry. But presumably Apple has all the agreements and says, look, do you like boatloads of cash? We will bring you boatloads of cash as long as you agree to this one point.
Yeah. Well, and also Apple says that they're not going to track your purchases, or they'll never track your purchases, which is, you know, we've talked about this on the show before, that is one way, you know, for all that we, you know, use DuckDuckGo and, you know, use 1Password and TunnelBear and stuff like that. Every time you pull out your credit card, in most cases, your purchases are being tracked and you're being put into some database somewhere that, you know, and then you're being presented with things that you may or may not be interested based on your previous purchases. Whereas if Apple's not tracking you, and like you said, by extension, Goldman Sachs isn't tracking you, then you can sort of have a bit more privacy in terms of what you're buying and you know, using your cash for, right? That's cool.
And a bit more safety on something like these hotel chains that are leaking cards.
True. It seems like there's a new one every week. So before I ask about the going around the room, I am, as much as it's cool that it's a laser etched titanium card, I am surprised that it is a landscape that is horizontally oriented card and not a vertically or portrait mode card, as is the fashion nowadays.
Really?
Yeah, it's, I mean, probably not like a card from, you know, whatever the largest four banks are in your neck of the woods, but if you look at smaller companies like, I want to say Square, Acorns, N26, like Venmo even, all these tech companies or fintech companies, banks, they're all doing the vertical oriented card, largely because rather than being something you tend to swipe, and the horizontal sort of orientation makes sense, we're putting these things into chip readers that are vertically oriented, so the branding makes more sense being portrait mode.
I was even thinking in your iPhone case, when you slide them in the back of your iPhone case, you know.
Indeed. So the around the room, let's go in reverse order this time. Drew, are you signing up for the Apple card when it comes out?
Oh, I'm one of those guys who always is trying to get any kind of card that will accept somebody whose credit's a little burnished. So it'll be curious to see if Goldman Sachs accepts me, or whether or not they're running the high interest on low credit scores, etc.
Okay. Mark?
I will probably get it, even though, you know, I kind of like the card I use now because it gives me a lot of miles. I prefer the miles to getting cash back, but I'll probably get it anyway.
And Tim, assuming it comes to your neck of the woods.
Yeah, so. I have a couple of cards that I like, and I don't really go out of my way. I get these things in the mail all the time. You've been pre-approved for this and that and the other thing, and I don't bother with cards much. I have two rewards cards that I use. I don't think I would get this either, but I do have a question, though, just before we, as a sort of a sidebar. So tell me about Goldman Sachs. cracks. I mean, from what we've talked about on the show in the past, the American banking system is a dog's breakfast for most in most cases. What is Goldman Sachs? I mean, assuming I've heard the name before, obviously, that are they one of the more solid financial institutions in the States? Where do they stand?
So they're
They're the number one financial institution, but they're an investment bank more than a not a commercial bank, but they're extremely powerful. Some might say too powerful. If you Google Goldman Sachs, you will find lots of interesting things to read about.
Amusingly, Goldman Sachs said that they weren't impressed with the Apple event and said that it might be a good time to sell off.
That's an interesting.
Yeah, it was really funny to see that come from Goldman Sachs.
Tim, to answer your question there, when you talk about the big four banks, in some order, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase, and Goldman Sachs are the four that people are talking about.
Right. Okay. And what about you, Jaime? You're going to get the Apple card?
Oh, absolutely. Like, this is the most sure thing of all these things, if only for the card itself. The other stuff seems okay. I shall compare, in my own finances. Does this make sense or not? It certainly seems like, unless there's like a rotating category where, electronics this month are better on some other card, it kind of seems to make sense to buy the new MacBook Pro I mentioned that I'd like to get using this Apple card and get the 3% back on that.
Well, I have a titanium MacBook Pro here, I have a titanium G4 here, so I'll be chopping that up to make some MTJC credit cards for you guys too.
See, now we know what they're using all that recycling for. They're chopping up the old computers to make credit cards.
Just mashing them up, melting them down. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, real-time follow-up. I'm finding that Googling Goldman Sachs doesn't give you any of the interesting stuff that I expected it would. So you might have to do a little bit more research, but they're pretty tied in with the government, and they're pretty powerful as an institution. So do a little bit of searching, digging around, and you'll find some stuff.
All right, let's dig into points 4, 5, and 6 as we're running long here. So Jaime, what's next?
The next one was Apple Arcade, which is their game subscription service for mobile, desktop, and they're saying living rooms. So that would be tvOS, and they're going to have apparently 100 plus new and exclusive games. There'll be a new arcade tab in the App Store, so you'll be able to play all of these things on iPhone, iPad, Mac, Apple TV, playable offline, which I think is a very particular note, given our coverage earlier of Microsoft xCloud and Google Stadia, the streaming services for gaming. No ads or additional purchases. The wonderful family sharing, as we mentioned before, available in 150 plus countries and regions, apparently coming out in fall of 2019, but pricing is the one TBD item that they didn't even touch.
Well, now we talked about this in the last couple of weeks and some speculation about how they would do this sort of Netflix of games and whether or not us cool developer types would be able to play along. And it sounds like it's going to, who knows, they'll probably roll out something at WWDC, adapting your game for Apple Arcade or whatever. But so this sounds like it's going to be an exclusive club, right, for certain developers?
Maybe. I don't know. It's hard for me to tell, or maybe I completely missed a line. It was hard for me to tell if they were sort of launching with sort of the big names that you might know, and that's what it's going to be. It's going to be more of an exclusive club, exclusive studio partnerships that they have, or if that's just to get it off the ground and make it worth whatever amount of money you're going to be expected to pay per month.
Apple had commented that they're actually going to be supporting these companies in getting these games off the ground.
Okay, so that's good to know. I think I missed that line, because we were wondering before if they were going to do like a Netflix Originals and have their own sort of studio, or if they were going to buy IP from other folks. But it sounds like they're picking some people, they're picking some ponies and helping them get off the ground.
Then the question is, how do you become one of those picked people? Is there going to be an open audition, where you pitch your idea and if they like it, they'll help you with it? Or do you have to already be an established game company and they will help you to port your existing game to the platform? Or something else? TBD.
Yeah, they just said there were 300,000 games out there already on the App Store and 1 billion players. But that's just before they announced the Apple Arcade. So whether or not, I don't know if you'll be playing Geese Squad anytime soon on Apple Arcade, right? So like, will they support Coco's 2D games?
it probably won't be available in Canada.
That's true. I keep forgetting about that.
Hundreds of countries except Canada.
That was the key phrase there.
Right. Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about this one. I think it's a little too early to give a quick trailer of like different games, but no specific focus on any particular games. So it's hard for me to tell where this fits, and I suspect that it's going to fit nicely for sort of the sweet spot for families, where you can feel happy that your kids are going to be able to just play good, decent games, and you're not going to be worried about them getting sucked into some in-app purchase nightmare or Skinner box sort of situation where they're like hooked on this one game because it just tries to keep them to keep playing, to get them watching ads and stuff. So I don't know how it's going to work from how do they divvy up the money that they're getting for each subscription service price to all the different developers. That may or may not negatively impact the incentive systems for the kinds of games that people are going to design. But at the very least, I think people will feel pretty safe and happy letting their kids play with this sort of stuff. And I think that's the sweet spot for this. I don't think it's meant to 100% overlap and compete with the like hardcore enthusiast stuff that Microsoft and Google are going after.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was just concerned about like our audience. So, like, you know, are we going to be able to play along as developers, I meant, you know?
Right, right. I don't even know about doing it around the room because there's no pricing. Is there anybody who's like really rallying forth ahead or saying no, absolutely not? Anybody who's anything other than TBD?
I have a 12-year-old boy. He actually watched he watched the event with me. He practically had an aneurysm when it was announced. I don't think I'm going to have much of a choice. So we'll have to see.
So you're just right. Waiting to see how bad the damage is then.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's only a question of if, but how much, right? Yeah.
But you know, he's at the age of, would you put the damn iPad down and eat dinner already?
Right, right.
I think the inclusion of Mac into this really seems to lend itself towards the Marzipan play that we mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
That would just be an easy way. I mean, of course, a lot of these things are going to be done with like Unity or Unreal, you know, maybe Crytek's engine. But I think having that wrapped up into a Marzipan wrapper would make it easy to go between TV, Mac, and the iOS devices.
I think I remember them also saying not only is it offline, but you could actually start a game on one device, stop and switch to another device and pick the game up again.
That's right. I did forget to mention that. Yeah, so seamlessly moving across on these things, that'll be really nice. I'm not sure for me whether this will make sense. I think it will really depend on that pricing. I don't have any children, so I think it might be out of the sweet spot that I mentioned, but it is interesting to hear your perspective, Drew, on having a family member who does seem really interested in it.
He seems as such. I could be misinterpreting the panel. Thing.
Yeah, I'm likely a no on this one. I just don't play enough games. I mean, if it's cheap enough, sure, why not? But if it's, you know, if it's going to be like $10 a month, then I'm almost definitely a no.
Oh, don't tell people that. They want to believe that software engineers do nothing but write code and play games.
Right. All right. Next, Tommy.
The next one is a much smaller one, and that is Apple TV Channels. And that is their take on being able to purchase content from other providers like, say like HBO, Showtime, CBS All Access through Apple as the sort of storefront. Very similar to, I think we've mentioned other attempts at this, like Amazon has their thing as well, does something very similar. I don't have a lot to say about that other than like, yeah, that seems pretty cool. I kind of wish I'd signed up for CBS All Access through that instead of having yet another account, but cool. I mean, anything to make it seamless and easy to get content, I think will be good. It certainly helps people collect all these streaming services, that's for sure.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe you'll be able to move your account over.
Maybe. That'd be like pretty nice.
Yeah, I did that with Linda, like when Linda got bought by LinkedIn and they're now hooked up with the Toronto Library. So with our Toronto Library card, we get Linda courses for free. So I canceled my account and I signed up through the library and I contacted Linda and they moved my account over for me, right? So they may be able to do that for you. So this leads into the next thing, which is them making shows, right?
I mean, it's Apple TV Plus is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I have a couple of notes, but I got to admit, I was doing work stuff while this was going on. So
yeah.
I knew only some of the highlights.
This was the driest part of any Apple event I've ever seen in my entire life.
I heard you comment about that, and I actually have to disagree with you that I think that what they did there was actually perfect for what it was.
Well, they brought out, I mean, they brought out Spielberg, they brought out Jennifer Aniston and a few other people, and they brought out Big Bird for a bit to talk about Sesame Street coding. But, you know, I think it was like 90 minutes into the show, and we'd only booked a boardroom for 90 minutes. So it was kind of like, hey, do we really? And there was a lot of gaps between those people coming on stage, right? So mm-hmm. with nobody marshaling that, right? So it was a bit dry.
But the whole thing is that was national. That was NAB. That was a video supplier saying, here is the programming that's coming out for this season. And
right.
it was the presentation of the producers or the actors or the directors to do a quick oversight. And this is the first time the public gets to see something like that. Normally, the public just sort of accepts what shows are coming with a little bit of a surprise. And they basically said, nope, we're going to let you see behind the curtain of what we're doing. And I think the average viewer, if they're into that kind of programming, was absolutely riveted by it. And I also found it interesting that they started from very tame programming to more socially challenging programming as they went through the list. They started with just the 1929 science fiction anthology series, and then they moved into series about disabilities, and then, of course, ending on Oprah, who basically said, I'm going to basically challenge these difficult social topics. So it was interesting. It was not for developers. It was not for people in the computer industry at all. It wasn't meant for us. It was meant for those people who watch TV or produce TV.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I think you can both be accurate in that I do agree that it was, at least even what I saw of it, was the driest part, but that is still a necessary part to your point, Drew. I definitely have seen some analysis of this that's all over the place. Again, they didn't give pricing, so it's kind of hard to tell where this falls and things, but it seemed like they have a fair amount of content that's going to be available, if not on day one, that at least in, you know, the pretty early months, maybe the first season, if we want to call it that. My eye went to the Jason Momoa sci-fi-ish kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're people in the future and some catastrophe has happened and people are blind and people are wondering if the legends are true that people used to be able to see. That seems like an interesting premise. The other stuff seems pretty cool too. I'm not sure that it's necessarily fair to go on Apple on a couple of different angles I've seen of, Netflix has more. It's like, yeah, Netflix has been around for many years. I mean, you got to start somewhere, right? They're not going to match Netflix's
back catalog. Apple's going to blow a lot of money on this for the first few years. This is the kind of thing that you're piling money into, and it's not going to turn you that profit for the first couple of years. So they've got to really slam it hard with good quality production, or it's going to fizzle really badly in the first few years.
Oh, absolutely. And the other sort of criticism I saw is like, well, it's a lot of like the same voices we've seen. Where are the new voices? I'm like, you can't start with new voices. People need to see Spielberg and Oprah, for heaven's sake. They need to make sure they understand that quality content is coming here for whatever that price is per month. Yeah, I mean, I'm very hopeful. We should be critical if Apple doesn't expand it beyond there, but I would absolutely lead with the stars of the show.
They had slide that had like 75, 100 more names on it. So it looks like they've got a lot in a pipeline at this point.
True. And the other thing too, is that we mentioned this on Spotcast before, that when television shows are pitched, like they're like these big conventions they have down in LA and places like that, where people come from around the world to buy the rights to show particular TV shows, right? And so CBS and, you know, ABC and Space TV here in Canada and City TV and CBC will all be in this one room. And I'm sure Apple's going to be at that table. And, you know, with the money they have to pay for things, they're probably going to get some exclusive rights to shows. So we'll see what happens, how that plays out, right? It's always been a challenge with us with television. We don't get the same TV channels you get. We have all the Star Wars is on our Netflix, but it's not on yours, you know, kind of thing. So it'll be interesting to see what Apple's, you know, buying power brings to their platform.
Yeah, Netflix original just means that Netflix paid the best price for it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
I don't know if it's something I'm going to subscribe to without seeing what the, what the schedule, the programming schedule looks like. I need to know pricing. But something that does make me very curious and interested is the fact that it's not exclusive to Apple devices. There is going to be an Apple TV app on the Roku and Amazon Fire TV. And also, I think some select smart TVs by like LG and Samsung, if I'm not mistaken.
I was going to say, and if you remember, that's what basically sold the iPod was once they put iTunes on Windows. Windows, right? All of a sudden, they opened up the market to a huge audience, right? It wasn't just for Macs.
I was surprised that they decided to contract in with Samsung, knowing their wonderful relationship over phones.
it's sort of a weird TVs.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
A weird frenemy relationship they have with a lot of these other companies. I think the one thing that I want to dispel a little bit, and I'm not, you know, like as I just said, I'm not necessarily sold on this. I don't know if I'm going to, but I'm going to mark myself as a strong TBD. Folks are going to be like, well, how can this launch? I'm like, do you not live in the United States? Do you not know the history of CBS All Access? It has 4 million subscribers and it started out with one show. Yes, it has like two now because there is The Good Fight that people like. But let's be really clear. They started out with Star Trek Discovery and they were able to build a streaming service off of that. Mm-hmm. I'm fairly certain that Apple can build a reasonably successful streaming service off of the multitude of different shows and documentaries and movies that they're going to have for this thing. So I have no doubts about that. I don't know if any of it's going to be good.
DC Comics also having the same luck.
Yeah, yeah. There's a battle brewing for sure, right? Disney has by far a lot of content with Star Wars and, you know, the Disney Animation Archives and Marvel and stuff. And that's why I said, you know, collect them all. Collect all the streaming services. I don't know where Apple will fall in that pecking order, but I don't think it'll be a flop is my main point.
You wanted your cable a la carte. Now you're getting your cable a la carte, whether you wanted it that way or not.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it remains to be seen what Apple will do with this. I don't think, we've seen some products come and go with them or some services come and go. But yeah, lately they've been hitting them out of the park. So who knows? Ooh. Knows. So before we move to our picks, Drew, you have one thing here in the main piece about the EKG.
Because I know you guys have been talking about the EKG ECG feature on the phone. And sure enough, we get to say it's now going to be in 30 countries and not Canada. They passed regulation through, I guess the EU has one base regulation for the entire European Union. So they're going to be opening up to most of the European countries and the UK, whether or not that's a European country or not. Stay tuned. But, you know, France, Finland, Germany, Greece, Guam, they're all going to be getting it. It's also going to be showing up in Hong Kong. It's going to be showing up in Switzerland, Sweden. They're opening it up in the Virgin Islands as well. My guess is that with this one, it really is a question that they are trying to spread to as many countries as they can, but they need to get the regulatory permission. And I would say that the Canadian regulatory requirements just may be more stringent, and they may have to go through more hoops to prove that what they're doing is acceptable.
True, true. That's Health Canada, by the way, for those of you driving at home. Yeah, we're waiting to see. I mean, I bought my iPhone Series 4 for that feature alone. Do you use it, Drew?
Yeah, I do. But then again,
how do you enable it? Do you hold it? I know you have something to do with the digital crown or something like that, right?
First, you go into the Apple Watch app and you turn that thing on. I think you actually turn it on through the Health app, but you basically have to turn it on through the phone to enable it. But I can say that, you know, I travel quite frequently between Pittsburgh and Toronto, and you know it doesn't shut off while I'm in Canada. It's just a question of where you enable it. And I guess that also is where your ID is currently registered.
Right, right. Okay, cool. Well, we'll look forward to that in Canada at some point. But yeah, for those of you in Europe, you get to try it out, which is cool. Alrighty, so let's go around the table as we usually do, and let's look at our picks. And so, Jaime, you have a pick?
I do. The iOS Con conference just took place in, I want to say London, not that long ago, actually. I think it was like last week, and they already have many, if not all, of these sessions, session videos up on their website. I've linked that on their program site. There's a little bit of a catch. It's a very, very small wall that you have to have an account and be logged in to do so. I'm not going to say you should do this because I am not a lawyer, but I sure do believe that it is very easy to just mash in garbage to create an account and sign in. And you too can be watching keynote decisions by John Sundell, or one that's on my list that is 30 Xcode Tips in 45 Minutes by Sean Allen, and many more familiar faces and some new faces in here.
Right. Yeah. I think Ellen Shapiro was designated nerd on Twitter, was at the conference, and she kept tweeting out some stuff. So yeah, I was looking forward to seeing what came out of that. It looked like some pretty interesting sessions. I look forward to that one. So my first pick here is the Swift programming guide has been updated. That's the book that we all got when Swift was first announced back in 2014. We all scrambled over to the iBook store to buy this Swift programming guide. Well, the fifth edition came out just the last couple of days or so. We've got a link in the show notes here. So if you want to go back and check and see and reread read the book with written for Swift 5, you can now do that and get a bit of Apple's perspective on it. And sort of tying in with that one too is the Ray Fix over at the Ray Wunderlich site has updated. If you're a subscriber to the video content over there, he's published I think sort of an updated version of his advanced Swift course focusing on protocol oriented programming. So the first couple of videos he goes through, like, you know, how basic classes work with polymorphism, with, you know, subclassing and all that kind of stuff. And then he talks about how to do all that same kind of procedure with protocol oriented programming. So interesting series just come out. So I started watching that today, and those are my two picks. Links in the show notes. Mark, do you have a pick?
I do have a pick. It's kind of a follow up. I remember last summer after WWDC, I was saying that one of my favorite talks from that conference was the one that was an introduction to the network framework that Apple had just introduced. And this is a low level framework that really sits underneath things like URL session and all the higher level networking frameworks that are available in iOS. So after all this time, I've actually had a chance to use it now, and I got to say, it's pretty cool. It is pretty low level. I mean, it's at the level of sockets, if you've ever used those things, where you basically set up a very low level network connection between two endpoints, IP address and a port on one machine to another machine, and then you can just send data back and forth, you know, bytes in between, without necessarily worrying about exactly what type protocol you're using. And sometimes you might have a reason for doing that. I mean, most of the time you'll want to use a higher level one like URL session, but if you ever have the need to do some low level networking programming, this is pretty amazing how well it works and how much easier it is to use than, say, a socket, which requires using some cryptic old C routines to set it up. And just as an example of something you can do, if you can set up a listener, what's called an NW listener, at some port, and then from your app you open up a URL session to that IP address and port, and the listener will respond and lets you create a connection, and then you can actually just see all the bytes that are coming in from that. So you don't have to go through the whole standard HTTP kind of set of functions to look at your request and your response in a very specific way. You can actually see the raw data that's being sent back and forth. That's just one example of what you can do with this thing. So again, not for everyday use necessarily, but if you ever have a need to do low-level network programming, it's pretty amazing what you do with this stuff.
Cool. All right. Drew, do you have any picks for us?
Actually, yeah. Now that the 12.2 has released to everybody and the event is over, they're immediately moving forward. 12.3 is now out for beta in iOS. It's also available in all the other devices as well. And the two interesting things is that the wallet is now showing that slightly higher amount of detail for transactions, and the new TV app, as was shown, is now in iOS and tvOS. So you can get your first look at how that's shaping up, and I believe the Apple channels are a little more obvious now. So you can see how that's beginning to shape up and shake down.
Cool. By the way, just I don't know if you guys have, I use the Apple TV remote app on my phone, but a friend of mine was pointing out to me that I guess the control center has an Apple TV icon, and I think you guys, I've got the older version of it, but I think you guys have updated your phones to 12.2, I think, right?
Yeah, they changed it.
If you pull down the control center and click on the Apple TV app that's on there, it's much more like the big remote, the smart remote, right?
Oh yeah, there it is.
Using the full screen of the iPhone.
I also discovered in 12.2 your Apple Care status is now in the general preferences.
Really?
Yeah, if you have Apple Care Plus for your device and you go into general preferences, you should see your Apple Care expiration.
This is under settings general?
Settings general.
But do you have to go into your account or?
No, it's
like click on your name.
It's on the about for the phone in settings general. At least it is on mine, and I've had that for 12.2.
Okay. Right. Interesting.
I think that's a really nice addition there, because you're always wondering, oh, how much time do I have left? And it's really a bit of a pain to go to support.apple.com to look that information up. So if that's on your device, it's definitely much clearer. And that I noticed came in with 12.2 in one of the betas.
All right. Cool. All right. Well, I guess that's it for the week. So hey, Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
I'm on Twitter as @devwithahair.
All right. And Mark, if people want to get in touch with you?
I'm at markburr at smepsoft.com.
And Drew, if people want to get in touch with you?
They can find me on Twitter or just about any other internet site at Lord Andre, LordAndrei.
All righty. And my name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra on the Twitter machine is where you'll find me. And so until next week, we'll say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fm. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at mtjc_podcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskMTJC. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/MTJC. You can find details on how to help us out on our website at mtjc.fm/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
That's it. End scene, as we like to say at the end of the show. That's where we cut in the music. No bombs and sirens, though, on this one.
Drew, were you on Roundabout? Is that why Tim's mentioning that?
Sorry, for which?
Tim, I assumed you were making a reference to Roundabout where after show has the air raid sirens.
That's because of the impending zombie apocalypse?
Yes.
Exactly.
I think so, yeah.
Is she actually using the strange voiceover I did?
On your episode, she did, but she hasn't used it since. So, yeah. Did you listen to your episode? Yeah. Drew was on four people, by the time this comes out. So, yeah, he was just before Sean Allen and John Sundell. So,
right after
forgotten Drew's.
Right after Max Fleischer's grandson.
Well, that's true. Yeah, yeah. You're kind of sandwiched in there, you know.
I listened to the show a couple of episodes before I was on it, and it was just like his answer to the zombie apocalypse was binge watching The Waltons. And I was like, well, there's an answer for you. I apologize if I talked over people or didn't, if I interrupted and such.
No, okay. You're great.
You fit in really well. Roll.
That's right. We fix that in post.
Tim knows my current situation. You two don't. And that is the reason I say I'm in Pittsburgh this week is I'm in the process of trying to emigrate.
To Canada.
Oh, really?
Getting to Canada, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, I actually have a job waiting for me in Toronto. I just did the second phase of paperwork for my visa. So I'm currently on hold for my work visa. And once that gets through, I have a place in Ajax, which is about half an hour east of Toronto. And then I look forward to seeing how I change over all of my Apple stuff and learn all about where my television shows have gone to. And
you have to start saying sorry a lot more.
Sorry.
I do that by accident now when I'm up there and my girlfriend mocks me. She's like, you're really trying to go native, aren't you?
and you of course say, oh, sorry.
Sorry.
Some brand new internet service providers to yell at.
You have to change the way you say Java too.
Java?
Yeah. Not Java, it's Java.
I don't know. I'm an iOS guy. I don't do Java.
Exactly. Well, yeah, it's funny. Jaime was saying a couple of weeks ago that people were asking him if he was Canadian because I guess he's been hanging around with me too long.
Yeah, between like you and Greg and for a time, Aaron, like I picked up enough of the accent that people will call me out on it sometimes.
Now, which of you two are in San Diego or are you in San Jose?
I'm in San Jose.
Oh, okay.
Mark.
Yeah. And up in Seattle area.
Whereabouts?
North of Seattle in Everett, closer to where
no
Boeing
are roughly. When I lived in Seattle, I was in Snohomish.
Okay. Yeah. I'm in Snohomish County and you were in Snohomish itself. Okay.
Yeah. I was right on. I was literally off the front road.
Cool. So
I worked for that little software company in Redmond for a while.
I've heard of them. They make airplanes, right?
I was on the Mac office.
self-esteem.
Oh, interesting. So you probably know Olaf Hellman then, if that's the case.
Oh, yeah, I know Olaf. Olaf's great. All right.
Cool. I'll bedazzle him with that particular tidbit. Like, hey, guess who I talked to? Guess who was on the show?
Actually, Olaf and I went back further than Microsoft. We were both at Mac Hack the same year.
Oh.
Which is a piece of history that most people don't even remember anymore.
What was that about?
Mac Hack was a three-day conference that started Thursday at midnight with the keynote. It then went for 72 hours. You could sleep if you wanted to, but you'd miss all the fun. And the entire purpose of the con was to deliver a couple of radical papers and to work on a hack that you started while you were at the con to do the most useless and pointless thing on a Mac. Now, this was back in the pre-OS 10 days, so it was a lot of swizzling the A-traps, and the best hacks would actually get a branded A-trap mouse trap. Mm. And during the dinner on the last night, everybody would show off their hacks, and you had to like scream things like too useful. And there was two categories that were adults and utes. Utes were named from my cousin Vinny. And I will never forget this 14-year-old girl who had hacked the text presenter A-trap so that anything that was ever writing text, if it was a blob of text, it would alphabetize the text. And brought up the Finder, and everything on the Finder was alphabetized. You had the file menu was EFIL, the edit menu was DEIT. And then I looked at the right and I said, oh my God, the clock is alphabetizing in real time.
Wow.
Most useless hacks you could imagine, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I was at an Apple event once, and the guy whose actual email address is tim@apple.com, not Tim Cook, but he was talking about useless tricks you could do on a Mac. And one of them was he had this Apple script that would open every file on your computer.
Yeah. Oh Lord.
Yeah. That's an RM slash.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Is it? Or open dot or whatever?
Yeah.
Or Steve Heyman, who's a friend of ours on the show, like friend of the show, he works for Apple, and I was at a thing with him, and we were doing, what was that thing you could do where you could actually message each other's computers? It was like a
UCB talk.
Huh? No, it was later than that. It was like I think it was iChat. You could chat with each other on the network, and you get these little bubbles that pop up.
I forgot what it used to be called. It was Bonjour, and then it became Rendezvous, which became Bonjour, and you could actually do something that was like Zephyr. Who said Zephyr?
I said Zephyr.
What college did you go to?
MIT.
Okay. I was a CMU groupie.
Yeah.
You either had to be CMU or MIT to know what Zephyr was.
Zephyr was, yeah. Yeah. Way before its time.
Yeah, anyway, this is like, it would pop up a little banner. So he wrote an Apple script and had us all run it that would basically apply to whatever you said with, I know you are, but what am I, right? so then we had 500 people in the conference, everybody's Mac was saying, saying in full volume, I know you are, but what am I? And just completely repeating that to each other over and over again.
In the Pee Wee Herman voice?
No, it was just the Mac and Talk voice. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
lots of fun. Those were the days when Apple was fun.
Back when you could watch extensions march across the screen in its startup.
Yeah.
You could strike fear into the heart of anybody by saying suitcase.
Yeah. Oh, I was a publisher, so I use suitcase every single day. You just had to get used to it.
Font management.
Yeah. Now we just have Fontbook. Every now and then I have to install new fonts in my Fontbook which people probably don't even know about anymore, right?
But no, it's still there.
When I do actually stuff, I have to open up Fontbook and pop it in and restart Photoshop because my Photoshop's old.
I had to use Fontbook this past week because I'm doing an app that has the Chinese I Ching, and I had to find the font that actually had the I Ching in it so I could add that TTF into my iOS app.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah, I think the only time I've used that is when I added the Fira or Fira code. I don't know how it's pronounced. It has all these
for your
pictures for programming. Yeah, I use it in Xcode, and that's how you install it.
Really?
The new social network that everybody's talking about.
Fontbook?
Fontbook.
That's what all the cool kids are using, yeah.
Yeah.
My avatar is an AE glyph.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. All right. Well, Drew, thanks for coming on the show. I'm glad you survived your very first show with us.
Yeah, he did say he wanted to get into more podcasting. That was his first mistake, right?
Yep.
Just throw him right into the deep end with us, the loony bin.
So what's happening with you next Friday? Or, sorry, Wednesday, Hummy? You're coming?
I will not be coming because I'll be at Code Mobile UK, and that'll be...
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
Because of the time change, I'll actually be in sessions at that point. And I think I might be pretty close to presenting at that time. I was going to present announcement on Thursday, but I think they've moved me to Wednesday. So
right, okay, because in the notes you had possibly not being able to show up. So definitely,
well, because I thought the time zone difference would be
doubtful,
that I would luck out and have it really early or really late or something. But no, it's like smack in the middle of the day.
Yeah, this is like, isn't this like, oh, it's in the middle of the day? I thought it would be like,
oh, wait, no, not middle of the day. It's like smack middle of the morning.
Yeah, wee hours in the morning, right? Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah. Because Tammy and I occasionally interview people from the UK, and we have to do like shows at like Saturday at like 11 a.m. or something like that. Crazy stuff.
We had a nightmare last season doing a metal show. We had Carolyn Bigby in from
Australia.
From Australia. I had somebody on in the UK. I had Jesse Ketterwall on the East Coast.
On the same show?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, it was crazy enough when we had Marin Todorov on when he was like in Germany or something.
Yeah. It was the middle of the night or something.
It was like stupidly early for him.
Yeah. Well, he had a newborn baby, so he was up anyway. Yeah. I thought he was in, because he comes into the States once a month now because he works at our fruit company. So.
I'm going to say I recorded episode 0 yesterday, but because of the way that we're scheduling, we got James Dempsey and the Breakpoints coming in for episode 1. It's not going to be until after the next 2 episodes of MT does it. So I'm going to wind up doing a whole bunch of your episodes before I even get to my first episode.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, you know, we'll get the word out there. Can you tell us who your new host is? We won't publish it.
Oh, it's actually on the site now. If you look at the info, Jen Bailey.
Okay, don't know that person.
She's predominantly an Android person. She's working on Ray's video editing team.
Oh, okay, cool.
She teaches at Ames Community College, so we actually have an Android centric person, and we're going to be doing the live cast again this year after WWDC and Google I/O.
Right, cool. More and more Android stuff. We had the Android lead guy on last week, I think it was, right, on Roundabout. So yeah. All right, folks. Anyway, it's way past my bedtime, so yep. I guess we'll talk to you guys next week. We'll see Drew next week and Mark next week and Jaime in 2 weeks, I guess. Right.
Yep. Thanks for
coming. Yeah, in 2 weeks.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
All right.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.